This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Oh, rough as a pair's arse. No, you didn't get that, did you? No. Sorry.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Lovely touch from Snodgrass. It just shows the confidence of Robert Snodgrass. And Hourihane! 5! And Aston Villa have started 2018 off in some style.
G'day Villa fans and welcome back to Jednak's Jungle. Now, after a period of playing possum, or as you pommy say, playing dead at Villa Park to make sure I was fit for the Socceroos for the World Cup in Mother Russia this year, Brucey's only gone and resurrected me at centre-back in a desperate attempt to bait Micah Richards from permafrost hibernation. Turns out Richards' carcass was too badly decomposed to salvage, so we had to make do with old Tommy Elphick. With me back in my rightful role in midfield leading the pride, we can now dispose of Glenn Whelan down the dunny. So listen, Bruce, it's all about promotion now. If we don't stay on course, things will get as rough as a bear's ass, that's for sure. Pray to the god of beards for me, will ya?
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. We are back after the holidays, and joining me is the man who predicted we would get 5 wins in December out of 6 fixtures, Dan Rogers of the villaunderground.com. Welcome. What went wrong?
This is why I don't gamble anymore. That went well, didn't it? That went well.
Did we? Yeah, we got one. We got one. I think I said 3. I think I said 2 draws and 1 loss. So both way out. But you, what? I mean, you had like optimism running through your veins at fever pitch.
I really thought we'd just plough into December and we'd be where we are after the Bristol game, sort of earlier in December. We just lost our way badly for 3 or 4 games. I don't think anyone anticipated we'd find ourselves in that horrible 4-game rut.
I think, as I said previously, once we got in the playoffs, I never saw us dropping out until for the rest of the season, and it was just a matter of would we sustain ourselves to be automatic, or would we kind of scrimp around? And I mean, because if Aston Villa's current squad cannot make the playoffs, then there's something wrong. But we'll talk about that later on. How was your holidays? Did you stick local, or did you venture off to visit some family in far off lands?
No, all local family from far off lands visited here. So it was a Birmingham based Christmas. It was all good fun. So it's a funny one this year with the game on the 23rd against Sheffield United. There was that sort of bit of a lull while we waited for another home game.
Bruce berated that, saying the fixture people should have a look at it. Fans shouldn't be having to travel to London and up to Middlesbrough around Christmas, which you know, was right. I mean, normally it's a Boxing Day local derby of some kind, or at least a Midlands encounter. But actually, I had 2 weeks on the road. It was the Dave Michael roadshow. Went to London for a drinks up. After about 8 pints and 3 tequilas, I had 3 hours to kill before I got a sleeper train to Edinburgh. So I went in to see Star Wars The Last Jedi, which, interestingly, when I was in Scotland, a friend up there wanted to see it again. And I said, yeah, go on then, I'll see it again.
Hang on, did you pretend you hadn't seen it, or did you?
No, we'd both seen it. We had, you know, when I landed, we had a, you know, kind of a big discussion about the film. And, you know, I was very eloquent in what I was saying and, you know, what I was faults I was picking out and, you know, good things about it. And then when I watched it the second time, I realised I was seriously going in and out of that film due to the 7 or 8 pints and 3 tequilas, because...
3 tequila glasses.
I don't remember those 5 seconds, and I don't remember those 5 seconds either, or those 10 seconds. So it wasn't like, you know, normally you go and see a... Well, speaking from experience, you go and see a film, you fall asleep for 5 minutes, and then you regenerate, and you're back in it, and you're all right. But this was like, I was literally... There was like seconds of the film every so often that I had no recollection of. So God knows what was happening there.
Did you do this during your film career? those reviews that
all,
you did.
All the time. No,
you have no
all
clue
the time.
What happened.
All the time. I remember going to see Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which was Robert Rodriguez with Johnny Depp. Mm. Antonio Banderas, I think, and Selma Hayek. And that was a midnight screening in Venice, and I was absolutely pissed when I went in, and I just and the film makes no sense whatsoever, and I was just sat there and I was just smiling at the screen.
Do you know what, I might take this approach with some Villa games. Actually, I might arrive after 8 pints and 3 tequilas, and I could be the person, the outrageous optimist. In fact, perhaps I was like that before Christmas.
Week in Edinburgh, and then I was in the northern regions of England. I went to York, and then Hull, and Lincoln, and then back to Brum. Get any good presents?
So good that I can't recall any of them offhand.
Yeah, I got somebody got me a Amazon Echo.
Ah, you've joined the club.
Being a big fan of 1984, I'm always against this kind of surveillance and people monitoring what you visit on the internet and listening in.
To you, David.
Facebook listening in because your mic's on, and suddenly they're giving you ads and conversations you've had and all. So while we're recording this podcast, the Amazon Echo, the microphone has been switched off.
Mine's on though. Mm.
Anyway, let's get into the show. Into the 3 points before we dissect what happened in December, and obviously on the New Year's Day massacre, as it will be fondly remembered from now on in. The 3 points, speaking of the New Year's Day massacre, I don't know if you saw the post-match interview by Steve Bruce, where he opened up by saying he was as rough as a bear's arse.
Oh, that mic's not on, was his next line.
Oh, is that mic on? Is that Amazon Echo on? He looked a bit ill on the post-match Middlesbrough, where he was slagging off all his fans about being arseholes and mass hysteria, when most of us were just unhappy that our promotion campaign seemed to have the wheels had come off, and we'd slipped out of the playoff spots where we'd been for the last couple of months, and suddenly we're in ninth place.
That's it. When you've even got Ian Taylor, the stalwart Villa rep, going, "Fucking hell, we're mid-table." It was a bit of a worry.
Then you've got the owner saying, this is a disaster month, and then you've got the CEO saying, we're cancelling all leave and we're going to get to the bottom of this by asking the hard questions. I mean, maybe noticeably Bruce was ill the two games we won, so maybe that was what's linked to the suddenly flip in form. Also, it's sure the saying is a badger's ass and not a bear's ass, but never mind. Point number two, well, this is probably the same thing. Mass hysteria has struck once again. This is something that the term that he was using at the start of the season after 3 games, when the Twitterati were calling him out and hashtag Bruce out was once again up and running. But I mean, at the time, you know, we obviously had a bit of sympathy for him because he'd only just got X amount of players in. There was other players
very supportive.
Other players that still had to come in and, you know, he hadn't any chance of playing his first 11. Mm. But mm. this, as we, you know, as we said, it was about a team suddenly out of nowhere slipping out the playoff places when they were suddenly faced with teams in and around them.
Mm.
And suddenly you're staring at the league table and we're ninth and you're thinking, well, you know, haven't we learned anything?
Yeah.
And also the fact that, you know, we're still going into games where you feel like you could flip a coin for the outcome. It's not as if...
You feel like you can flip a coin in-game sometimes for me. That there's a couple of things about the mass hysteria comment that's interesting that both times Bruce has used the term, so he's brought the mass hysteria word to the table.
People on online dug up old articles of, you know, when Sunderland had a dodgy start. And, you know, this is a few years ago. And he's using it then. I think, is it 2011-ish? So it's obviously his little, he's got a little trademark on that one.
He's got a little trademark. The other thing is that he uses the word crisis a lot. I mean, that I was just reading some of the transcripts and we even dug out the interview that he did post-match after, it was after Middlesbrough, wasn't it? And he must have said the word, he definitely said the word crisis three times in what can only be 15 seconds. It was a funny one because I sit firmly in the, you know, as I've said in a couple of pieces on my site, in the centre ground where you try and make some reasoned sense of what was going on. I think we were quite similar and again with the other reasoned Villa fans who go, do you know what, there are some quite obvious reasons as to why we think we're not doing well. And it was no surprise to me that, enforced or otherwise, you know, we'll get into the games in a minute, that when those changes happened, as I say, enforced or luck or, you know, a bit of coming to our senses in terms of gameplay, results suddenly swung back in our favour. I don't think it was any surprise to us. But I don't think as well, I mean, I perhaps swing a bit further than yourself in the direction of, I think there was more hysteria and the calls for sacking him were premature. I think he was at a juncture when we went to Middlesbrough. But in terms of mass hysteria, I think one or two things happened. I thought the online comments from Jar and Wynas, is that helpful to a sitting manager? To make so, I don't think so. I wouldn't want my boss doing that to me on social media before I started work.
Because this was the thing. I mean, you certainly got the Birmingham Mail, who are obviously firmly supporting him, you know, from start to finish, saying Bruce out, Brigade should give their heads a wobble. But as you've said, this wasn't about fans. I mean, I mean, from my timeline, I'm not seeing mass hysteria.
No,
I know there's a lot of people out there who don't want Bruce, and there's the ex-Blues connection, and so any excuse, any bad run of game, it's like, get him out, get him out, get him out. But it was completely legitimised by the owner and the CEO actually publicly declaring this isn't good enough, and, you know, that's a fair comment, and any rational person would say this is not good enough because, hey, we were firmly entrenched going into this period, 2 points behind Cardiff for the automatic spots, and then suddenly we have slipped out, we're 3 points off the playoffs in ninth. And I think the owners, like, you know, they shit their pants a little bit, understandably.
Well, and I think that shows, and I think that there's a couple of things, the pressure points show, I think, The owner's panicking because he's thinking this stands to go sour very quickly if there's no improvement, which I have to say, if we hadn't won two games, I think that my view has always been that having to sack Bruce would put us in the worst position since we've been relegated. You know, we were essentially at square one when you do that, and you're at the lap of the gods, I think, in terms of getting it, you know, through another transition, getting the right manager in, and I hate the idea of doing that again. So for me, it's not because I like Bruce, but the thought of having to sack another manager is even worse, you know, irrelevant.
Yeah, I mean, somebody texted me on the day of the Middlesbrough game, and he said, oh, if we don't win this, I think he's a goner. And I said, no, I don't necessarily think that. I think if he doesn't win one of his next, I can't remember if I said two or three games, if he doesn't win one of his next three games, then it's going to be hard, because what's the best time to sack him? It's now.
Yeah.
Just before the window kicks open. So it doesn't win another... So how many games would that... That would have been seven games without a win.
Mm.
And then, you know, there's been managers sacked for six games without a win, you know, recently. Yeah. So
I think we both prescribe to the view that modern football has this binary way of thinking.
But this is a little bit different at this stage than, let's say, Sheffield Wednesday and Forest, where they're just in a rut and they're like, yeah, let's try something else.
Yeah.
This is at the roulette table where you're thinking, we have to win, i.e. get promotion this season. Most people who are listening to this will know why, in terms of financial fair play, the parachute payments,
collapse of our team,
etc., etc. So it's now or never.
Mm.
That's the kind of mentality. So seven games, if he doesn't have a win in seven games, then you get a manager in and he's got a transfer window to try to rectify this. Although, I mean, we don't need that many people in the transfer window. The squad's there. That's the frustrating thing.
Well, that's what's been the reassuring thing. And that's why I thought that we would do better in December. And I do think we've done. You look back and you think, right, if we'd have not been so self-destructive against a Brentford, and if we'd have been more clinical again and just more direct and at a team like Millwall, well, add 6 points just from those couple of games I mentioned to that, and just go into games like the Derby game and the Brentford game on the front foot, and they're possibly different results, aren't they? But yeah. we are where we are, and I think that we were approaching the point of crisis, but I don't think we were there. You know, and I think that it was very important that we won at Middlesbrough, because I think a defeat would have made it almost a crescendo of noise going into the Bristol City game, where I hate the idea of must wins, because that's like a fuel to the press to stoke fans as well, and it does become a self feeding problem that games become must win, and I think that the fact that we managed to win the Middlesbrough and the Bristol City game, particularly the Bristol game, so emphatically, changes the narrative again, and it shows you how actually, you know, it's not many days since we were on the verge of crisis, but it shows you how quickly it can be averted too.
Right, listen, let's close off the mass hysteria there, because obviously we'll talk about the context of these games in the next few minutes. But number three of the 3 points took me by surprise, the fireworks. Where did they come from?
I wandered onto the Holt End and I thought, well, we have genuinely put dustbins at right back and right wing. And it was an impressive... I think it's a bit of a Marmite thing. Some people go, oh, I don't like the idea of fireworks. It's better. Oh, I thought it set the tone quite nicely, actually.
Yeah, it was, come on, let's fucking fuck up, come on!
Burn them!
Burn them,
motherfuckers!
Because I think against Wolves, Wolves use this kind of flamethrower thing, which is kind of similar to what we saw at Wembley against Arsenal.
Flamethrower.
But, yeah. Well, you know, like they spurt out flames, but this did that, and then suddenly there's all these fireworks going off, which I don't know if the health and safety boards. I mean, one fan has a pyro stick and the earth ends.
You can't take one of those snappable glow sticks into Villa Park. You can't even take a bottle lid, for God's sake.
It took about 5 minutes for the smoke to disperse.
It is.
It did set it up quite well.
But I thought cool. Yeah, I thought it was cool.
Because normally I look at that and I always think, well, I think the fans should do all this. You know, it should be the fan driven when it comes to atmosphere. And you got those people waving flags in the middle of the pitch. Mm. Is meant to be like creating atmosphere? Yeah, not really. And
flag waving in the middle of the pitch was always ruined by Bolton for me. They always used to bring those flags out when they scored, and that. I feel good. I used to hate that.
Don't they wave flags behind the goal now when Villa score, like they do at Arsenal, Arsenal used to do? And that's it's a bit lame-o. But it kind of worked against Bristol. Just it kind of shook people up a bit and just kind of focused them and, you know, to get them into the mood for it. I mean, I don't know if that's, you know, in hindsight because we won 5-0 because...
I mean, we'll get into the Bristol game. In the first 15 minutes of the Bristol game, we're quite cagey, really. But it was something different and I thought it worked, where I think things like that can go badly wrong for obvious reasons, but they can feel a bit tacky and a bit pointless. But actually, it was good, and you only have to look at some of the photos. It wasn't done on the cheap. It was a good. It was visually impressive.
Is this going to be a every game scenario, or is it just you think because it was a New Year's Day and Tony thought it was the Chinese year of the lion, but actually it's the year of the dog, and that's why Wolves are top of the
top
league
dogs.
And running away with it. Dog heads.
They are. Well, we shall see.
I mean, bring it out on the big games. It's why not? If you can afford it, Aston Villa. Let's talk about what's happened recently, and let's break it down. I mean, there's a kind of a twofold thing here. There's why did December go so wrong, and also the renaissance of the last two games.
Mm.
Obviously, as we said at the top of the programme, you were saying five, and I remember at the time going, this guy knows nothing about football. Because
you can
it's
just
like
work this out.
There's this kind of, you know, it's you have so many games coming thick and fast, and you know you're going to drop points here and there. It's just the kind of nature of the beast.
I just thought we might get into a, you know, through November we'd got ourselves onto a nice run. And I just thought, you know what, if there was going to be a period where we might come out the other side and having made a bit of a statement of intent, because in my head, it alludes to what you were saying at the beginning of the show, really, that we were starting to come into a group of fixtures of teams around us, that top eight thing where there's a few rumblings of, oh, we never beat the top eight teams, and rah, 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 rah. And it was by not getting off on the right foot, I think it became sort of like a self-propagating problem that... we joked privately that, you know, we had a couple of people contact us after the couple of defeats because we sort of posted similar things around what we thought Bruce needed to do to change this. The glaring, yeah. The obvious, really. And when those changes happened, you know, it wasn't really any surprise from my point of view that we started to see some results, because it was all logical stuff.
The top of my head, we're talking about things like, can we just sort out the midfield?
Mm.
Because that's holding us back. Can we, you know, play players that have triumphed in playing further forward in midfield, like Lansbury and Hourihan at their previous clubs, and that's why we bought them. Why don't we play them in similar roles at Villa? Because they're playing a lot deeper. Mm. Grealish, can we sort him out? Is he somebody who needs to be playing in a certain position, or does he need a team playing in a certain way? And there's kind of a bit of both in terms of that solution. But against Bristol, you actually saw him as he's almost like the conductor of the orchestra, and I didn't know if Bruce would have the balls to put him out there in that kind of role, and, you know, and also I didn't know if, you know, Grealish had it in him to kind of deliver that with that kind of responsibility.
Well, this is where we caught up separately, and it sort of mirrored some of our observations post Middlesbrough, and then again after the Bristol City game, is that Bruce's hand was forced in game during the Middlesbrough game because of injury, wasn't it? He had to bring Grealish in because of the Onoma injury. And the Bristol City game, it forced the start, but we saw an unshackled Grealish for one of the few times, and it's the first time I actually rocked back in my seat a bit, and I thought, bloody hell, it's the same problem that Hourihan's been having, I think, to some degree, that we saw how effective he could be against City, that you allow players to actually have a bit of freedom and express themselves, and you know, they get a goal and their confidence grows, Hogan being a good example who we'll get to. But Grealish was a revelation against Bristol City, we've sort of got a little bit of a mini list of people to work down and to sort of evidence and to underline the point, really.
But there is this thing about how fate transpired, because he had a decent game before the Middlesbrough game, but then he was suddenly dropped. And a lot of fans were saying, what's going on here? And as you said, he only got on because Onoma got injured.
Mm-hmm.
Similar with Elphick, who on this show, like weeks ago, months ago, said, well, get Elphick,
wasn't it?
As soon as Terry got injured, I said, well, people are talking about, oh, it's Samba Jedinak, and we've actually got somebody who's, let's not forget, he was the captain of Bournemouth, who got promoted, and he was the bee's knees, and he's...
It was three league titles, wasn't it?
And he had some iffy moments at Villa, and then he's just written off, as a lot of players have been. Mm. I mean, you know, going back to Fabian Delph, I had to tell people to, get lost on that, because they would say he's shit, and it's like, well, you know, he was at a certain age, he had so many injuries, but it's just like, some players you've got to be a bit patient with, but Elphick's already done it. And, you know, we've had this debate before. Did players suddenly turn shit when they joined Villa? No.
It's my, that's my default phrase, I think, that you don't suddenly become a shit footballer overnight. And
so Elphick plays, and then in the next game, he puts in Jedinak again.
Mm.
And this is the infamous one where Whelan gets ill, and so it forces his hand to actually, on the day, to select Elphick back, and Jedinak, and this is against Middlesbrough, and, you know, all's good, and we won that game. I didn't understand, I mean, A, admitting this, and B, even thinking it in the first place, that after seeing Elphick, who had a decent game, was it against Derby in the previous game? I can't remember.
Or
Brentford. But he had a decent enough game, and then to suddenly drop him and sacrifice Jedinak, who had been, you know, two games where he'd been dog awful.
Chronically, yeah, at centre half.
I mean, he'd cost us 2 points against Sheffield United, and he'd obviously let Derby. I don't know if we'd have beaten Derby anyway, but obviously he contributed to that.
Yeah, it made us weaker, that's for sure.
And then to suddenly throw him back in, it's just like, what are you thinking, Bruce?
And this was the kind of thing where I think if you're easily swayed, or if you feel Bruce isn't the manager for you, I think this is the kind of thing where Bruce doesn't help himself. That, you know, taking the Elphick, Jedinak and Whelan dimension, you had Elphick who'd come back into the as an option.
Yeah.
You know, that's his position. He was fit. He'd come in and done all right. The inexplicable thing was Jedinak, who'd been identified as the replacement, had had two abysmal games in that position at a time when Whelan, who, you know, and let's be grown up and talk about, he was doing okay. He had a poor start with Villa, was doing okay. The stats back up, you know, the tackles and yada, yada, yada. But the undoubtable facts were he was costing us games through mistakes and errors and goals. And his form had fallen off a cliff in that key December period. Yet we were looking to persevere with him. And it took that illness to Whelan to force the obvious change. And it reminded me a little bit, Martin O'Neill was very guilty of stubbornness, where he almost didn't want to, you know, pick the obvious.
Yeah, stubbornness with players that he'd actually got in himself. Even though the better option was there, it was because, you know, he hadn't actually brought that player to the club.
Negatron alert! Blues boss Barry Fry at Villa Park! More handsome than Bruce! Appoint as manager! Appoint as manager!
And that was the thing that jumped out at me, that when Bruce says, oh, you know, I've got my way of playing and it's worked for me and I'm never going to change. Well, that wasn't actually what he was applying. It was a, hang on a minute, now I'm the boss and I'm going to almost pick a team to make people go, oh, well, aren't you the clever boss who's picking this combination of players that we would never pick? When it hurt us for two or three consecutive weeks, there were, you know, like Onuma being played, who, as he chronically lost form, you know, it was a revelation in the early part of the season, approach, you know, through into November. Davis chronically overplayed when really what we should have been doing was, judging by the Bristol City games and the you know, Hogan needing game time, his own admission, we'd missed a trick, hadn't we?
Well, we'd also seen a selection where Bruce went without a recognised forward, despite having Hogan and Gabby on the bench. I mean, at the time, he admitted after the game, maybe he made a mistake there. And
it was three consecutive weeks he was rocking up at the press conference and saying things that you thought, well, it's very honest to do that. And that's the one redeeming thing of, he's admitting glaring errors, which I don't have an issue with someone. That's a very, you know, he's manning up and he's saying, I would have done things differently. But it's the bit where you think, well, why did you do it in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind people, like, if it's a 50-50 decision and you know, you, in hindsight, they say, well, you know, maybe I got that wrong, but you kind of understand why he went for it, because it's, you know, it's kind of 50-50 or it's worth a try. But when it's something like, da-da-da, Villa, first 11, no recognised striker, it's like, well, okay, let's, judging on how our midfield's been keeping the ball and creating chances so far this season, we're not exactly Spain a la when they were winning the World Cup and European Championships, sometimes playing without a recognised striker. This just seems to be making us even blunter, you know, than we were previously. Also, Hogan, you know, it's now or never. You've got 10, you know, he's the one who bought the damn player for 10 plus million, whatever it is. And you haven't even got faith to play him when you haven't got any other option. That's like ridiculous. And he's obviously fit enough to play, or else he wouldn't be there.
No.
Victim of his own downfall. I mean, to turn it on the fans and say mass hysteria, well, this, you know, it was almost like you're watching your manager fraying in front of your eyes at times.
Well, that's why my suspicion, and it's not founded on anything other than speculation, really, but I do wonder that before the Middlesbrough game, given the statement from the chairman and the CEO, whether the conversation had been had as to what the next two or three games should look like and what the outcome would be realistically if it didn't look a certain way. Bruce looked a man under pressure for me, you know, from the fans, but, you know, in terms of mass hysteria, for me, you've got to count the club's stated position in that as well, and I wonder whether that was a less than thinly veiled swipe that may have been misinterpreted as a dig at the fans, potentially.
Yeah, I think there was one thing I did notice was in the Middlesbrough post-match lash out, there was he was specifically targeting this Brentford 45-minute blip. At the end of the Brentford game, the players had to leave walking past the Villa end, where the Villa away fans were, and everybody was chanting, "You don't know what you're doing," as they left the pitch. So I think a part of isolating it down to Brentford 45 minutes was a kind of reaction to that, as well as obviously what we've just said about the owner and CEO.
It was all...
But he shouldn't have been, I don't think he should have been saying that. He should have just stuck to, you know, keep it boring and just say, you know, we've had a bad run this December, but this, you know, we're back in, moving in the right direction, and hopefully that will just be our blip, and it's all uphill from here. Just quickly going through those games, I mean, against, we covered the Millwall one last, and, you know, when we had one shot against Millwall at home, there was worrying signs there, and that did follow through. I mean, Derby, I thought we were lackluster. I mean, the fact that Weimann scored Brentford, who some fans called the pub team before the first time we played him, and we haven't beaten them in four attempts in the Championship, and they've played us off the park, you know, generally speaking.
Well, and the thing is that Brentford team has been absolutely churned up every single time. Yeah. There's been every transfer window in between. They've been absolutely harvested by the division, haven't they? And that's a it's a fair thing. To be fair to Brentford though, and I think that they caught us when, you know, we had a classic Villa of two halves. I thought that our setup, our tactics, some of the personnel on the pitch, it defined how we'd lost our way in December for me. You know, Derby was a different game because I think we caught Derby when we were in that moment of Bruce stubbornness, if you like, around the centre half pairing, and actually Derby had been on a real ascent.
They've been rocking and rolling for sure.
It all culminated, I think, in this need to just look at, you know, the fact that we've got a good group of players. We just actually need to use them for the purposes and the qualities that they've got. And I thought we did a really professional job on Middlesbrough moving towards the positives, because I thought Middlesbrough were poor, personally. And, you know,
I had a funny feeling we'd beat Middlesbrough. I was actually more confident going into the Middlesbrough game than the Bristol game. That's how football works. Bruce lashes out. There's all this furore in the press, and you just think, hey, he's going to win the next game, isn't he? So he then, you know, suddenly he's got the high ground.
It was the first half of the Middlesbrough game for me. There was you know, and you look at the team sheets before as well, and I saw Gisted on the team sheet, and I thought, you know, you know enough about Gisted to know he's not particularly mobile, and he's a lovely chap, but wouldn't buy him back, you know.
Jedinak actually did a good job marking him, so that kind of nullified Gisted's threats quite easily, actually.
And I thought that, you know, we saw again another former Villa player in Adama Traore, who even now some people seem to, I use the word romanticise, about this exciting prospect from La Masia, you know, the Barcelona Academy. Doesn't do it for me. You know, you can do a pacey run every now and then, but I'm sorry, you squandered, you're just wasting away in the Championship doing nothing.
I think there was an example of a use for him, actually. It's when you have a corner, like you've got a corner, you just leave him at the halfway line, because we had a counter attack, and was it Hepburn Murphy or somebody was like clean through, and he just ran back as cover, just out sprinted them completely. So he's like the ideal man you leave on the centre spot just to stop any counter attack. You know, when you're going up for a corner.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Nathan Baker, another player that people cry about, and he had a chance actually early doors. I mean, Bristol City, you know, they looked pretty lively first kind of 10-20 minutes, and you know, could have taken the lead. And there was that moment where Chester actually, it looked like the ball was going in, and Chester cleared it off the line.
Yeah, it was a great block.
There's a bit of a kerfuffle. you know, if that had gone in, totally different game. But Bristol had a tough game against Wolves, and obviously they lost their top keeper as well. So
they did. I thought the replacement keeper. I watched the Wolves game, and you know, the few minutes that the replacement guy was on the pitch, I didn't think he I was looking forward to him coming to Villa Park, and he didn't really get a sniff with any of the goals at all, and looked a bit ropey for me. I think there was huge positives to take from the Bristol City game generally, and I thought we responded really well to their manager Lee Johnson. Some of his what are considered, you know, quite young and fresh ideas of, you know, like the thing he does with the centre half Flint, to move him around the centre parts of the pitch, up the pitch, down the pitch. And I think we worked out some of those tricks around the movement that they've got with Bobby Reid, who's got 12 goals this year, but he'd scored 8 away from home. You know, they were 12 unbeaten on the road, Bristol City. Yeah, they'd had a busy game against Wolves, but, you know, I thought we did a job on them after the first 15 minutes. I think we worked them out. And, you know, if Snodgrass had took some of his chances, you know, it could have been 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean, Bristol City, but in terms of the calendar year 2017, had one of the best, had quite a sensational record.
Well, they were more than, I think, over 25 points better off than they were this point last season as well. Yeah, so it shows you how much improved they
were. And had the second best away record in the league, so there were no mugs.
No.
That's why I said earlier on that I fancied our chances more against Middlesbrough than I did against Bristol. After our previous two home games. But I think the early goals helped. I mean, once we went 2-0 up, I actually watched Lee Johnson's post-match interview where he's very, I mean, I like the guy. He's very, very kind of humble, very, very considered. And as he said, you know, when they went 2-0 down, he thought, well, he was trying to win the game still. And that's why he pushed Flint up.
Yeah.
And he said, if we can nick one goal back, then that suddenly switches the momentum totally. I mean, obviously, Villa have got what happened against Sheffield United in the back of their minds. So if Bristol City had got one back, then, you know, he just puts Flint back where he was and the game's on again and who knows what's happened. But
I mean, the Chester block was key.
And he opened himself up. And as he said, you know, he takes the blame for the third and fourth goal because he made those switches to try to still win the game. And gambled big time, and obviously they were there to be taken down. And the good thing is Villa actually took advantage, and they didn't. Bruce, you know, we've seen it before, he settles with what he's got most of the time, but he just let them still be free and let them have a go.
I thought they were given free rein, weren't they, to hurt and embarrass Bristol City, which is quite an unusual thing in modern football, really, that teams generally have a professional respect. I don't think this, you know, teams don't go out to spank, you know, when it's really obvious. I don't think that's my view anyway, and it's my, you know.
What are you talking about?
No, I think
okay, boys, make sure we beat them, but let's not beat them too badly because they're jolly good chaps.
Yeah, I don't know, but I do prescribe to that. I do think that I think you'd
bullshit.
See more. Nah, I don't think so.
Footballers aren't very good. finish their chances, I mean, you look at some games where Villa are having one shot on target. Well, they're not going to spank anybody because they're only getting one shot on target. But, you know, Newcastle were spanking teams last season. Brighton spanked them. You're just a Villa fan. You've got no idea what spanking teams means.
My definition might be different to other teams, but I take the view that for perhaps the conservative reason that I think a lot of managers, you know, they get to a couple of goals ahead, and particularly away from home more often than not as well, I think, and then they shut up shop. They don't take the view of, right, let's turn this into a rout, because I think that there's that controlled game management thing that's crept into football in the last 15 years particularly. I mean, I don't want to dwell too much on that, but I think that,
I mean, the other side of the coin is once you're ahead, then the other team has to come forward, so that opens them up. So if you're an away team, you're normally set up to be quite resolute at the back, but once you go down, you've got to come forward, so that opens you up to the counter.
Yeah.
And the good thing about, I mean, let's talk about some individuals. I mean, Grealish was calling for the ball every time. Yeah. He wanted the ball every time. And if he got the ball and he was facing with his back towards the opposition goal at the halfway line and he had two players behind him, he was still turning into those players and beating them or playing the ball, you know, wide and getting it going. And this was the big difference, was there was
intent.
a real positive intent. Yeah. You know, even going, and I think this symbolised it for me, was when the ball came out, I don't know if it was from a corner, And James Chester was still up there on the sideline, and instead of Pat playing it back, which
the back heel.
you'd put money 99 times out of 100, a Villa player would play it back in that position, and he backheeled it back down the line to Adomar.
It was an excellent piece of play.
Who got the cross in, Hogan header, and then Snodgrass got the rebound. But it's just that attitude changes everything. Just to do that back heeler rather than just playing back and, you know, playing the percentages creates a chance because it suddenly the opposition, you know, they're expecting the predictable, and when you serve that's up something point, unpredictable, you've got them.
That's the point. It was something that we picked up on last season as well. We had a lack of spontaneity in the team, didn't we? That example of Chester's fantastic, because the last thing anyone expected in the game was, one, for him to do it, and two, for him to pull it off as well. You know, and then it lands at our most creative player in the team, who and it was another superb performance. From Adomar. It was a superb. You know, he put two almost identical. The one particularly that he fizzed across onto Hogan's head was underlined. I think Adoma's quality in that position, you know, but in terms of percentages and assists. But give the right type of service to a player like Hogan, emphasised, you know, by the fact he scored, and for Snodgrass's first, which was a fantastic save actually by the goalkeeper who I bagged out earlier.
Negatron alert! Hogan scores! Cancel Gabby's 5-year contract extension! Cancel extension! Cancel extension!
His finishing technique, even heading, and he's not the tallest of guys, but he knows how to header. And there's, you know, you go back to players like Tony Cotty or Tim Cahill, these short asses, but they know how to header the ball. Or even, you know, Adrian Heath, Inchy Heath, who obviously played for Villa for a little while. Was it a season? I can't remember. Mm. The old Everton forward. But these players who they could header the ball and, you know, get above or get to the ball quicker than, you know, somebody who's about 5 or 6 inches taller than them.
Yeah, and I think that you know, that spontaneity combined with a bit of quality on the ball in terms of the delivery, and to Hogan's credit, I think I saw it particularly in the Brentford game, and I don't know whether that was because he was returning to his old club. I thought he was quite isolated against Middlesbrough, worked harder, but against Bristol City, I thought, underlined again by the post-match interview that he did, which was fiercely honest and very quite revealing at times, that I think he accepted that he hadn't necessarily been good enough, was quite open that he needed a run of games, and clearly that was a dig that, you know, in order to be sharp and match ready and to do the things that he reckons he can do, he needs time. But actually, I think, you know, he can stand behind his performance against Bristol City, because I think it pleasingly reminded us that we perhaps don't have a dud on our hands here, and that would have been a big concern for I think a lot of fans, that we were worried about how, you know, I think you mentioned how few touches he was having and how when he was coming on
against Bristol City he only had 18 touches. So I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say what a great performance. I mean, the thing is, he's a more of a fox in the box striker. He's a finisher, so his job and what he gets paid for is give him one or two chances and he sticks them away, and that's, if he does that, then he's doing his job. You can't complain. And he had, you know, two shots on target, both ended up in the net, one obviously going in and then the other one serving up Snodgrass, who picked up the rebound. But apart from that, I mean, when that's two, there's 16 more touches in the whole game until he got subbed. He still needs to do more.
I think even by his own admission, he's not the complete footballer. And I have a feeling, I'm not sure we bought the complete footballer, to be honest. You know, we've not seen that at any point. And I don't think, there are a few people who I honestly can say they've watched Hogan's career for any length of time.
Well, he hasn't had one, really, because I mean, as he said, you know, of the 4 years that he's had, two of those years he's been injured, which was, you know, the big, we mentioned this when we bought him, that was the big question mark. Do you really spend that amount of money on a player that's been injured half of his career?
Yeah, I mean, that's still an issue.
Suggests that the technique that we've just been talking about, and was also demonstrated in his second goal against Wigan in the League Cup. He's a good finisher. He knows how to finish, and it's all about getting him more touches, but those touches being actual chances, getting on the end of chances, because, I mean, he looks like he'll stick him away, no problem.
Yeah. It was interesting for me to contrast him to, especially against Bristol City, seeing Hepburn Murphy up close, because different type of player who, you know, shows for the ball in a different way, you know, and obviously gets those touches in place. But it became very, you know, stood next to a Flint. It was interesting to see how small Hepburn Murphy is, and it was only a short snap in the Bristol City game, but, you know, he got bullied off the ball two or three times very easily, and you think, wow, you know, we've got huge aspirations and expectations of a young footballer, but it's not as easy.
In the previous game, he wasn't bad. I mean, I think Hogan got 11 touches in, like, you know, 75 odd, you know, minutes, and then Hepburn Murphy came on and he got 12. And, you know, these are meaningless stats, but Hepburn Murphy did get involved and he looked for the ball, and of course, you know, he's got a bit more space because Middlesbrough are chasing the game, but I thought he did all right when he came on in that game, but I don't see him panning out in the future as being, you know, Villa's number one striker.
As I say, I don't think it's a case of whether it was good or bad performance from my point of view. And we haven't really seen enough of him again at senior level. I think it's interesting that we've got such different options, and that a couple of those options are actually, you know, still developing youngsters. You know, the fact that Davis burst onto the scene and did some interesting things doesn't detract from the fact that he's still very much learning his trade. And, you know, the one criticism of Davis, I think, if he was a bit older and wiser, would be he doesn't score enough goals. You know, the glaring issue, I think, that for Hepburn Murphy in what I would perceive to be a more physical division where the strikers don't get as much protection as the Premier League is, he's very slight in terms of his physicality. But it's horses for courses. You know, it's a nice option to have coming off the bench at 70 minutes. Pacey, young, technically quite interesting. You know, it's something very much one for the future, I think, Hepburn Murphy, and that's why I think, you know, it's surprising me.
I'm quite willing to sit here being an arsehole and saying he won't really be the future at Villa, but because we're going to get promoted and we'll get some big fish in, and away we go. Davis, he's impressed. He's actually impressed me, you know, in the flesh. The only time Hepburn Murphy's impressed me is when he came on against Telford, two seasons ago. And he just switched the game. One of my guilty pleasures or most pleasing things about the Bristol game was just watching Bjarnason go mad in that game. he was awesome when he came on. he was marauding through the whole of the midfield. Some, you know, he was on the left, he was on the right, he was in the middle.
He was very much the utility man, and I mean, he was
dispatched his goal as cool as hell.
It was super cool. And Bjarnason, as Bruce observed, really falls into a group of players who haven't had the best of luck necessarily. And I think Bjarnason has been, you know, he's played everything from left back at Colchester on that horrendous pitch with the rain hammering down on him, to being thrown on in the last 15-20 minutes and playing left wing, centre midfield, defensive left midfield.
Yeah. But he's been judged against it. And he's somebody that, like, you know, I think I mentioned this in, you know, when we talk in an article I wrote about things we have to get right after the December period was looking a bit ropey, was, you know, Bruce has bought these players like Hogan, Bjarnason, and you're thinking, why has he bought them? Because it doesn't look like he's playing in a way to accommodate them. And in the case of Bjarnason, you know, what was the position he bought him for?
Yeah,
it's just that guy played in the Iceland team that beat England. We'll get him in.
And the thing about his role for Iceland is he very much as that player who's behind the strikers and, you know, coming out of the midfield in quite a threatening way. And we have seen with Bjarnason, actually, to be honest, he can be get into good positions, and I think his finishing with his head has been quite poor. And I do think that the narrative could have changed on Bjarnason if he'd finished some of those opportunities. But he's so suffered for being the utility man, hasn't he, as a couple of players has.
What you want is the Elphicks, the, you know, Bjarnasons and Hogans to be all not feeling that they're, like, left out in the wings, because those, you know, three players are essentially like new signings, as the old cliche
goes. You're
knocking
at the door, don't you?
Exactly, because, you know, Elphick was discarded on a scrap heap. He wasn't even in the squad. Bjarnason's warming the bench, and obviously Hogan's kind of in and out of injuries, and then he's, you know, not getting the ball when he's playing. So to have them all back in, I mean, look at our centre-back position now. Terry comes back, we've got Terry, Elphick and Chester, and if they're all playing to, let's say, at least 80% of their ability, we've got, like, probably the best trio in the league, potentially, or three of the best. You know, we can take an injury to, or we can rotate, because I'd like to see, even if Terry's fit, if we're playing playing two games in a week, three games in a week, then, you know, give Elphick one of those games and you're not going to be any worse off.
I think a couple of people had already started almost worrying about this fact of what are we going to do when Terry's returned? Oh my goodness, what a big decision. For me, although I think it's unfair on Elphick, Terry is the first choice centre-half partnership with Chester.
Yeah.
But in the context of exactly what you've just said, is that if Terry, we can't have him playing three games in a week at 37. It's not, you know, yeah. He's going to have breakdowns. The fact that he got that was an unfortunate injury with the foot. But isn't it a good position to be in to actually have, you know, Elphick as a competent centre-half alongside Chester? Chester really is the outstanding footballer in the team, to be honest. He's one of, I think we've said before, he gets overlooked, and but he's probably the most composed.
Just because he doesn't let you down. And so notices him, because most Villa fans are waiting for a player to let them down.
Well, to be fair to him, we have got a few players. You know, he's frighteningly quiet. You never hear anything, do you? And to be fair to Elphick, you know, he was almost in the mini bomb squad, wasn't he? Another one, yeah. Like Hutton. Hutton's another one who I have a lot of time for, because despite being absolutely thrown onto the slag heap, you know, quietly got on with it. I mean, Elphick had an opportunity, I think, to leave in the summer.
Yeah.
And opted, I think, perhaps to... one of the moves, I think, fell through, didn't it? But, you know, he's still here, kept his head down. You know, he's come on and, you know, he's a man-of-the-match performance against Middlesbrough, I think, if memory serves me right.
Yeah.
And, you know, his performance against Bristol City was competent too, so... positive.
Yeah, well, I'm just waiting for the Bjarnason scorpion kick to fulfill the prophecy.
And it'll be the playoff final.
I want it to be at Wembley, because obviously I think that's where the first scorpion kick was it not?
Yes, it was.
By the Colombian goalkeeper, yeah. Who's... Is it Aguita? Aguita?
Yeah. I mean, that was an amazing... Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, so get ready, folks. If we're in the playoffs and we get to Wembley, watch out for the Bjarnason scorpion kick that sends us into the Premier League. The way the other fixtures went, a lot of teams are dropping points. I think Cardiff have lost their last four.
Yeah. They picked up nothing over Christmas.
And so by beating these teams like Bristol City, you know, we gained 6 points on Bristol City over a couple of days. Just because they lost against Wolves when we beat Middlesbrough, and then obviously we beat them.
Well, it's results like, you know, the Blues managing to beat Leeds, that park the rivalry. That's a ridiculously good result for us, because that stalls anything that Leeds have got going.
Yeah, that's like money for nothing, because...
Just bonkers.
The Blues weren't beating anybody.
Well, no, and the other result that I think it might sound ridiculous given where we aspire to be and blah, 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 but the Wolves beating Bristol City... was a hammer blow for Bristol City, because it went, you know, in the space of 15 minutes, they were leading 1-0 against 10 men, and it turned on its head. You know, your keeper sent off, you're 2-1 behind, it's the 94th minute. You know, what on earth has happened? And
that was the game where you knew Wolves had won the league, I think.
Yeah, they obviously went on and they stuck another three in, didn't they, in the week? I forget who they beat, but they're on a run. They're almost, do you want to say irrelevant? Wolves aren't relevant to me anyway. But the point from where we are is that if we're going to zone in on anything, it's always the team above you. And at the moment, we need to get ourselves back cemented in the playoffs, which I think we've done. And absolutely, you know, the chase is on for Derby for me. That have we got the squad? Can we build some momentum? And a lot of these teams have got to come to Villa Park now.
Well, I think 9 out of the top 10 have got to come to Villa Park. So kind of shows you, it's just a shame that we dropped points against Millwall and Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Because if we had those 4 points, then with that fact that all these, let's say, promotion rivals have to come to us, I mean, if we had those 4 little extra points, I'd be feeling a bit more smugger about it. But, you know, all to play for, and it's still in our own hands.
But I'm not convinced about any other team in the league. I take no pride in this, but lo and behold, the Cardiff collapse is happening around us. And
I was going to say, it's the prophecy is finally coming true. I mean, there's no rush for these prophecies. I mean, I've just been winding you up the last couple of months because they've actually stuck with it longer than perhaps we actually first expected.
Yeah,
Bristol City are another team that I mean, it's hard to judge that. I mean, the only time I've seen them, apart from a few highlights, is obviously in the Villa game. It's quite hard to judge a team that have got an outstanding record, but what you're watching with your own eyes is somebody getting thumped 5-0.
Yeah.
So it's, but I don't see them, and Sheffield United as well. I mean, we should have put them away.
Well, Sheffield United, after 9 minutes of it, we're going back to they were on their knees at Villa Park after that. They couldn't believe what had happened to them, and the fact that we didn't win that game.
That looked like a 5-0. That looked like it was going 5-0.
That could have been another, you know, a precursor to the Bristol City game, really. And the fact that they left with a point was, I bet they can't believe it. It was like Millwall. They couldn't believe they didn't beat us at Villa Park.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the table, despite the chronic winless disaster December, we're fifth on 44 points.
No, we beat Middlesbrough in December.
Well, where we are here, you know, as of the time of recording, we're barely into January. We're fifth, and we've got to be in the worst. You know, I've come off the back of one of the worst runs of all the teams. But granted, Cardiff have had chronic form. I think perhaps slightly worse than us. But you know, we're 5 points off Derby with half the season to play.
Yeah, I mean, just to clear up on the other contenders for that automatic spot. I mean, Leeds, they're just. I mean, come on, nobody gets beat by the Blues. But well, Reading did recently, but they go a couple of games with it and they start to threaten and then they start spluttering. Mm. Likewise, Middlesbrough, where you think, right, they're finally on a run, and then we go there and beat them. I mean, if
they looked hopeless for me.
If they were far from impressive. If they beat us then there's their statement of intent. They could do something for the automatics, but I you know, come on. I don't see them... They were the team that everybody had as favourites, with Villa or them for the title. No, they're so legitimately, I'm just thinking Derby at this stage, us or Derby.
Yeah, I think so. I think Cardiff are on chronic form. Bristol City, I think, are now into their sticky patch, if you like. Leeds, you know, they lost to the Blues. I've remembered the other game now that I saw a bit of against Forest that they drew. And Forest form's pretty... Well, they're just a nothing team at the moment, having sacked their manager. And the fact that they couldn't beat them is, I think, says a lot that their probably best hope is sixth, I think. And Sheffield United are... A waning as well. So
and Sheffield Wednesday look like they're not the force that we expected, and I can't believe we got beat by them at Villa Park. But the upshot is, I think it legitimately is Villa versus Derby for the other automatic spot.
Watch this space.
So there you go, folks. If you like the show and also the website, please do become a My Old Man Said Patreon. Just go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon option. And support the show that way. That would be much appreciated. Also, obviously, subscribe if you're listening on Apple / iTunes. Subscribe there so you'll always get the heads up when the new show is. And if you, like myself, got one of these Amazon Echo devices, you can access the show by just saying, Alexa, play My Old Man Said podcast on TuneIn. If you're listening to this show and... you've got your Echo on in the background, it probably just triggered it on there as well. By listening to that. But yeah, so you can access it on that device as well if you want to listen to the show hands-free. Just one thing to finish on. I was thinking about this over the December period. Our attitude in terms of promotion. I just remember when I was a young lad when Villa last got relegated, I just remembered it was so clean-cut that the next season we were getting promoted, and that's all we thought about, or I thought about anyway. And it seemed to be a single-mindedness. There didn't seem to be any distraction. And you know, Villa started off pretty poorly at the start. You know, Graham Taylor was getting his team together, and then at the end they had a few hiccups. But it was almost like that will. We are getting promoted. We are getting promoted. That kind of got us over the line. I mean, we only got promoted on goal difference in the end. But this time, there seems to be, you get fans going, oh, I quite enjoy this league, at least we get a chance of winning, and it's not just getting beaten every season and just trying to stay up in the league. And as if they're admitting they'd rather stay here, and there just seems to be this kind of lack of ambition. And then you've got, like, social media, the clubs, the club's social media over Christmas, where they get that two-bit Twitter comedian who does, you know, impressions of football managers, not that great, to be honest. And he portrays Steve Bruce as some kind of bum. Mm. And so you've got this situation where the Villa manager is being portrayed as a bum.
By the club.
By the club. And yeah, the players are, like, thinking, you know, the players are in on this joke. They're doing this Santa's Grotto. And I'm sorry, but yes, you should have some fun and all this kind of crap, and, you know, sponsors, they want some content and they want the players, the celebs, how they view it to be pushing their brand. But I think because of what's at stake at Villa here, and, you know, if we don't get promoted this season, it's going to be a very different Aston Villa moving forward. And all these Dr. Tony plans are just all going to be pie in the sky because there'll be no money. And I think there should be more of a boot camp kind of attitude, batten down the hatches, and these players are like, this is serious now, we're not pissing around in Christmas jumpers, we're...
That was part of the Weiner statement that sort of surprised me, really, that the notion that all leave needed to be cancelled, and I thought, well, what? Who's on holiday at this crucial period when we're trying to... you know, this has got to be one of the busiest periods in the clubs and key periods for fixture congestion. But, I mean, don't want to pick apart a short tweet too much, but I've long been worried quietly on the side about, you know, I think people playing down FFP, people play financial fair play down a lot, people really, I don't want to generalize, I think the expectation was there to get promoted, but our lack of drive has been concerning, because the fallout of the FFP problem, the collapse of our TV revenue, you know, just £500,000 for 16 televised games last season. You know, how many weeks of wages is that? It's not...
Like, last season seemed to have gone without a whimper. There was hardly any disappointment. The press were all making excuses for Bruce. Bruce was making excuses for himself. And I'm, you know, not getting at Bruce here, but I'm just saying it just, you know, it was like, oh, no, we didn't go up, no big deal. It was going to take time to turn us around, blah, blah, blah. But this season seems to be carrying on a little bit in that kind of vein. And
it was a bit of casual, wasn't it,
as soon as the fans started to voice a bit of like, hey, what's going on here in this December period, then we get attacked, whether, you know, directly or not, by asking questions, essentially, what's going on. It's not, I mean, of course, it's all distilled to Bruce out. Well, we were never saying that, and most fans weren't. They were saying, what's going on here? We're actually concerned we're not going to get promoted this season, yet we have one of the best squads, and this injury crisis, we're only really missing Codger and Terry, to be honest, because we've got this big bloody squad. You know, we've got like £10 million players sitting on the bloody bench and they're not being played. So can you tell us what's going on and why you're not beating these two-bit team pub teams? So there needs to be, I think 2018 needs to be like, we're all in it together, get those bloody fireworks going before the game, and it's all about promotion.
Absolutely. Well, we don't need to meander and sort of trundle our way through the season as we did at times last, do we? You know, there was big changes last season, but we're a different outfit. I think that we've got one of the best squads to do the job at hand. You know, I still prescribe to the view that Steve Bruce is far from the perfect manager, but the credentials stack up to what we need here and now. I think discussions around the Premier League are premature until we get there. You know, people of the generation of Villa fans that maybe have watched in the last 10 years as well have only known the Premier League in a certain way. And I didn't watch much Premier League football last year, but I've watched more this year. And, you know, I have to say a lot to do with West Brom's demise, really. And, you know, a club that I would have considered to be stabilised in the Premier League. But that was almost their downfall, like a number of other clubs that...
Yeah.
And we fell into the same trap of fourth bottom was almost good enough. And sooner or later, you get found out. And it comes back to that word of ambition, that I think if you can show enough ambition and be... The blueprint is annoyingly someone like Leicester City, who had luck, good fortune, but actually the right attitude and approach to the Premier League that one season and probably since, that their fans, I imagine, get out of bed on a Saturday morning not necessarily knowing what's going to happen, but it's not going to be that they're going to see a boring game of football or be sat behind the ball and this sterile modern football that I don't think is particularly saleable or attractive to people.
To bring it back to the Championship and promotion, I mean, if you look at Newcastle last season, I mean, they had a big advantage because they were desperate to keep Rafa Benitez because, you know, his credentials speak for themselves and he was above the Championship standard and, you know, you wouldn't have batted an eyelid if he turned his back on Newcastle. But him staying galvanised the whole setup. I mean, suddenly the Newcastle fans, I think it's the Galloway flags or whatever, set up, and they were suddenly know, these massive flags everywhere at the games. And so the fans really got into this. You know, they really got behind Rafa because he'd shown that kind of loyalty that, you know, he was going to give it a season to help them get back because, you know, after all, he'd taken them down at the end. They were just fired up to get promoted. Well, Villa, we just lost all identity and we...
Yeah, yeah.
It was this kind of like floating out of, you've been in orbit of the Premier League and then suddenly you've been hit by an asteroid and then you're just floating off into space and you're not, you know, you're not going anywhere. Right, well, we'll try to get the momentum going for the rest of the season. This is the first show back of the new year and it takes us about 6 shows to get back to maximum, would you say?
No, well, it takes you 6 shows. It takes me 1.5.
All right, okay. Well, at least we'll be halfway there next show. Right, until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said...
Scott Hogan. Scott Hogan. Scott Hogan.
Scott Hogan, motherfucker!
Yay! Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.